Well, everybody, welcome to episode 282 of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast. As always, it's brought to you by our good friends at Coldwell Banker Mid-America. Their integrity guides their focus to power people to make the best real estate decisions possible. They pair local ownership and knowledge with the power of an international brand and the most advanced technology to elevate the customer experience and expectations. Their network of resources allows them to be the number one Coldwell Banker franchise affiliate in Iowa, guiding you home for over 30 years. All right, well, today I was hoping to do a volleyball podcast previewing tomorrow's matchup between Ankeny Centennial and Ankeny, but obviously that matchup did not materialize, and we're going to break that down anyway. Obviously, with Ankeny's loss, we're not going to have that matchup, and then it turns out that Centennial is staying in Coralville this week. They're not driving back and forth yesterday and today, so they weren't going to be available here in our office anyway, so we're going to break down the volleyball tournament as well as the football playoffs with my special guest today. He's eminently qualified to do so. His daughter Ellie plays for Ankeny Centennial, and of course he's also the offensive line coach for the Dowling Catholic football team, so he can talk about their matchup coming up on Friday with Ankeny Centennial. He's Andy Paul. Andy, how you doing?
Well, after hearing that, I feel like I'm about the G option for your guest today, but we'll try to give this do the best justice we can for the preview on the volleyball tomorrow. But yeah, I'm very excited right now the way things are shaping up here in the postseason.
Well, so you got your I voted sticker on. I haven't done that yet. Do you have a long line today?
No, there was a line and it went really fast. I was in and out 8 minutes. I timed it from the time I got in, and the poll workers were great. Everybody was super friendly. Got in, got out, and everything worked exactly like it should.
Did you go to this church over here?
No, I'm down at the Lakeside Center, which is weird because I live right by Hope. But yeah, we ended up going down to the Lakeside Center with our voting location. So,
gotcha.
Yep, made it down, and the parking was a little tough down there, but drove by early this morning and it was very daunting, so we kept going. And then came back about 10:15 and was able to get right in and get right out, even though the long line went very fast.
All right, well, let's break down the volleyball matches from yesterday. Of course, Ankeny Centennial swept Cedar Falls in three sets. They're all pretty close sets, and they're certainly challenged, but is that kind of what you expected?
Yeah, I think if you look at seeding and just the way the teams have been playing and the competition that they played against throughout the course of the year, a sweep in volleyball is probably very underrated. It's something that's very difficult to do, and the Jags were able to get out to a fast start. Sometimes in volleyball that can be a little deceiving because you let your guard down a little bit and you do have to finish it out. And then you saw the second game, they got out to a very slow start and were able to come back in. I thought showed some good moxie coming back and winning that game, and then back and forth set number three and able to close that out. So you saw just an incredible performance from Delaney Miller yesterday. She was really good. I thought Miley Butters, her passing, her job as a libero all season long has been good, but she took that to another level yesterday, and I think that's an underappreciated part of the game is that passing and how much that can just lead and get you in the flow of your offense. And the Jags were kind of one step ahead on the defensive end yesterday, and that really transitioned into some nice offense for them.
Well, yeah, I felt like when Cedar Falls didn't win that second set when they got up to that 9-1 lead, I mean, that had to be so deflating for them. And you know how big momentum is in volleyball, but they had to be thinking, well, geez, we can't win that set when we were up 9-1. How are we going to beat these guys?
And so much of volleyball is the matchups and where you're at in your rotation with different things and having your best players, you know, in the front row or back row or wherever they happen to be. And once they got out to that fast start, well, then we had our chance to get back in with our better part of the road. You know, just a stronger rotation, the matchup of how it matches up against Cedar Falls, and got into that, and made a nice little comeback, had a couple little nice serve streaks, and before you know it, back in the lead and cruising on through set number two.
When you mentioned Delaney's great performance, she ended up with 24 of the team's 44 kills. And I know Coach Reinhart told me afterwards that, you know, sometimes, you know, they want to have a balanced offense, but at other times, you just have to feed the beast between her and Jaden. And Jaden had 10 kills. And, you know, if they're going to win a state title, they're probably going to need performances like that from those two kids.
And those two are talented enough that I think they don't need to do anything superhuman. I think they can just play their game and they can win. Obviously, the teams left in the tournament right now with Waukee Northwest and Pleasant Valley and Dowling, those are all, and it would be no surprise that any of those four teams could win. I think what Mary Beth Wiskus has done over at Dowling this year with their outside hitter going down a couple weeks ago with a torn ACL, the fact that they're in this situation at the moment is very impressive, maybe one of her best coaching jobs that she's done. Pleasant Valley, if you look at their roster, they've got like 18 girls play varsity throughout the course of the year. That's incredible in its own right that they've had that many plays. So it's and then you look at the Waukee Northwest roster, I'm not sure they have a single senior. If I remember right back to when we played in the middle of the year, I think, and maybe just a couple juniors, and then it's primarily sophomores.
Right.
So that's a team that's going to be around for years to come. And I think the world of what Jody's done over there, went to high school with Jody. My wife played volleyball with her. Really the first family of sports in Iowa, the DeVries family. It's her maiden name, and she's one of those, the five that played Division I sports there. And it's really just what she's accomplished over there. Her daughters, you know, are really good volleyball players for them. So it's going to be a huge challenge for Centennial coming up on tomorrow morning when we get rolling. But yeah, that matchup, you know, the weapons that the Jags have, I thought yesterday there was a little stretch in there where they got a little predictable, kind of towards the beginning of that second set, and then started. It doesn't take much. You get the ball to a Heather in the middle, you get the ball to Finley Griner on the outside. Tatum Schmidt had a couple really nice kills, and those girls didn't have to be, again, superhuman, but they have to be just enough of a threat that they can step up, and they did that at times yesterday. Everybody's got a role. And I think it's a pretty defined role on the Centennial team right now. And to Coach Reinhardt's credit, she's really developed that throughout the course of the year. And everybody knows exactly when they're going to be called upon to do what. They step in, and before you know it, you're in the state semifinals.
I forgot to ask Jaden yesterday, but I noticed these last two matches, she's had a little bit of a wrap on her leg. Did she pull a hamstring or something?
No, it was it's not a hamstring, and there was a point in the regional final that it was coming off, and she was dealing with it as the point got started, and they set it to her, and she was on the right side in the rotation on that, and it was one of the most impressive kills I've ever seen. So I was like, let's just have her mess with that to start every play. So it looks like something that might be a glute. I guess I don't know exactly what it is, but yeah, she's got it wrapped, but it certainly doesn't seem to be affecting her play at all.
Not at all. Well, you touched on the Waukee Northwest team. Let's break down that match a little bit. I certainly thought that match with Ankeny could go five sets because they'd had three close matches previously, and I wouldn't have been shocked if Northwest won, but I certainly didn't expect them to get the sweep. Boy, they're impressive.
Yeah, they really are, and they had things keyed up, I thought, quite a bit yesterday. They were right there, and they didn't take Reagan out of the game, but it just made things difficult on her, and it led to, you know, they've got that sophomore right side hitter, the Ladwig girl, and she's really good at the blocking wise, and she's just enough of a threat for them. Obviously, Logan Poe, Jody's daughter, is really, really good on the outside, and they set it to her wherever she's at on the court. But throughout the course of the year, they've kind of developed some other weapons throughout the season. And so Ankeny was really taken out of the flow of their offense, I felt yesterday. And you just saw a lot of tips. You saw a lot of hitting errors. They didn't hit very well during the course of the game. It was just an unfortunate time to have that happen.
Well, yeah, Ankeny came into the tournament with an 11-match winning streak. I know the Register picked them to win the whole tournament. I mean, they certainly have a good shot as anybody. You know, they have to feel awfully bad that they didn't get past that one.
Well, I think that their collection of hitters is probably about the best in the state when you look at who they've got as hitters. But the sport of volleyball, it has to click between all the different positions. And I used to say that, and I was taught this growing up, that football is the greatest team sport there is. But, man, volleyball, it takes a lot to go right to get that bump, or the pass, I guess it is. Now the pass, the set, and then the hit to get that thing down. And it's been really, over the course of watching my girls play and watching my wife play in college, I've learned a lot about the sport. And it's an incredible team sport, and it takes an incredible team effort to make it work.
Yeah, of course, Ankeny had the two set points there in set three. You know, if they could have won that set, it might have gotten interesting because, you know, we talked about how momentum can change, and if they get that third set, you know, they may have been able to go on and win.
Yeah, you just never know. And again, you know, the margin for error at the state tournament, especially the Iowa State tournament, it wouldn't have been a surprise to see any of the eight teams that were there actually go on and win it. Indianola, from the beginning of the year, has been one of the best. It took Centennial 5 in a long match in the fifth to win that one. Waukee beat Centennial to start the year. Malia Rogers, probably the best volleyball player in the state for Waukee. So if she gets on fire, they can beat anybody. We saw them handle Ankeny very easily earlier in the year. So, yeah, it just would have been not a surprise for any of those teams to win it, the eight that came in. So of the four that are left, everybody's got to be feeling pretty good about it. And that margin for error, again, they just didn't hit the ball very well yesterday. You know, a big part of that, I think, is on Waukee Northwest. So disruptive on their blocks, and they cover everything tip-wise, but it just really took Ankeny out of their rhythm and made things difficult offensively.
Let's break down the matchups for tomorrow then. Centennial did beat Northwest in two of the three previous meetings. Of course, they had that incredible match early on in the season. I wasn't at that one, but the Jags scored the final 8 points in set 5 to overcome what would have been a 14-8 deficit, I guess. You just don't see a comeback like that in set five.
No, you really don't. I think that kind of set the tone for the year, too, because then they went on to take one from Dowling in five after that. And, who knows how things go differently. If the Jags don't finish up that one, it gives Joaquin Northwest a lot of momentum going into the conference season as well. These teams, the matchups are very interesting because you've got Waukee Northwest with their youth, but it's youth that you're going to hear a lot about these players in the coming years. Like, these are some super talented players, and we're not talking D2, D3, JUCO type players, NAIA. We're talking legit D1 volleyball players. Centennial's got great senior leadership right now. Everybody knows about Pratt and Miller, but Finley Griner's been really good too. Centennial's got a ton of juniors that play, but the combination of hitters that Centennial's got with Pratt and Miller, those are, might go down as two of the best combined that they've had, at least in the 13 years or 12 years of the school right now. So the matchups are going to be, it's going to come down really to serve receive. That's such a, it sounds so simple, but it's very hard. But just being able to get that first pass up and get you into the flow of that offense. One thing that Joaquin Northwest does, and I thought they did a really good job of yesterday, is they target the setter when they're attacking, and they really try to get you out of system and make things very difficult to get the ball to anybody but the outside. And by doing that, you filter everything over to your, whatever Ladwig is, 6'2 or 6'3 over there on that right side. You filter all the hits over to her, and it can make you very predictable when you get things out of system. And I thought that's what they did a really good job on Ankeny of yesterday, just constantly hammering the setters. That's where they're going after on their attacks, and kept things open there, and eventually it worked out for them. And I would expect more of the same tomorrow. Jags, a little bit different setup there, but with some more height in the setting position. But we'll see how it works out. They had a really close one to start the year, and then Joaquin Northwest handled the Jags really handily at a tournament a couple weeks later, the Jags handled Joaquin Northwest really handily at a tournament. So who knows what this one's going to turn into tomorrow.
Well, I know Northwest had 17 blocks yesterday, just four for Ankeny. Obviously, their size, can cause some problems. I'm sure they're going to be sending a lot of blockers, towards Jaden and Delaney. The Jags are going to have to figure out how to counteract that.
Yeah, and a big part is going to be who is that third option going to be that steps up tomorrow? Is it, we've seen Maddie, we didn't see much from her in that first set or the first matchup at state. Didn't need to. Maddie's a competitor, Maddie could go down as just a junior right now. Maddie may be discussed down the road as one of the best athletes we've had at Ankeny Centennial with what she's been able to do on the softball field and now on the volleyball court. What she does isn't natural. It's just not at all. Being able to play center field and then play middle. She's springy. She's just very naturally athletic in everything that she does. Nothing that she does is going to make someone go, wow, that's incredible. But she is effective in everything that she does. And I think someone like her or the sophomore Sophie Heather tomorrow, those two players are going to be, again, they won't have to do anything. We're not looking for double-digit kills out of either of them. But if you can get five or six out of that position tomorrow, I think that takes a lot of stress off the outside hitters. And that's going to be key tomorrow. And just leave things open for those alleys.
Let's just touch briefly on the other match. I know Dowling has been able to recover after losing, their one outside hitter earlier in the year to an ACL injury, I believe. Do you feel like, they have a shot to beat PB?
PB's really good. We got them early in the year at the tournament. It was one of both of our first matches of the year. Got them then, went three with them recently, right up there with them. And Dowling, again, they've got competitors, so they've got girls that'll fight the whole way through. PV's just really, really naturally good at a lot of different spots. They've got a vibrant club scene over there with everything, the Rockets and the other clubs that they've got going on over on that side of the state, six pack. So they've got some nice advantages over there. But it could go either way right now. It's tough for me to make a really strong prediction because in high school sports, you just don't know what's going to happen. But Dowling's middles are a couple girls who play other sports. The Muller girl, we've seen her play basketball, very talented basketball player, probably future D1 basketball player there. And when you get someone like that, again, naturally athletic, that maybe her volleyball skills aren't the most honed, but she can be very effective and very disruptive, that makes things really difficult on the opposing team. So the all CIML final wouldn't surprise me in the slightest.
well, no matter who wins tomorrow, we're going to have a great matchup in the final on Thursday. I mean, we could have a 1-2 matchup with PUV and Centennial. If the two underdogs win tomorrow, then we're going to have a rematch of last year's championship match. That would be interesting. And you talked about Waukee Northwest Youth. You know, if they could somehow manage to win the tournament this week, they might win a couple more.
Yeah, they're super young, and Jody's done an outstanding job over there with what they've got. She's got a program that girls want to play for, and they've had some girls come from other places. They want to come play there, and she's created a pretty good atmosphere over there. And obviously, coming off a state title, losing pretty much everybody off that state title team, and here they are again in the state semifinals.
All right, let's talk a little football now. Of course, you guys are gearing up to play Ankeny Centennial in the quarterfinals on Friday, and that game will be down at the new Mediacom Stadium near Drake. This will be the first time that I've seen that stadium. I've heard good things.
It's a beautiful stadium. It's a great size for high school sports. It's a good combination of a big-time feel with how they built the stadium, but it seats 4,300, I think. So you're also right there. It makes it a good atmosphere. So you got the ribbons around the upper level, so it really is a big time feel in a smaller, intimate stadium. So we had a good time there on Friday night, great crowd there, and it can make it really loud. It's a fun place to play.
Well, three of the four matchups in Class 5A on Friday night will be rematches. We got some interesting matchups there. Of course, you guys played Centennial a few weeks ago, and you guys were able to win that one in triple overtime. I'm still not sure how you guys won that game.
I'm not either.
but it's going to be a tough one, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And, these are fun games. These are why you coach, so you can play in coaching games like this. And, I was just talking to Ryan yesterday, Coach Ryan Pizzetti, and Ryan's a good friend of mine, but on the weeks that we play each other, we don't talk much football. But I just thanked him for having football practice in the morning, and so that all those football players could get over and cheer for the volleyball team yesterday, because if you looked at how things were student section wise around the arena, I mean, Centennial students showed up better than any other school that was there, and so it was really fun to see the support that they had. And then that's the different programs getting along, and the coaches looking out and cheering for the other programs. So what they've done this year with Centennial, and we knew it was going to be a special year for them with the players that they had coming in, or the players that they have that have been coming up. And the fact that we were able to get out of that game with a win, I still don't know exactly how it happened. There was a lot of things that went right for us in the second half of that game, and somehow, in triple overtime, we leave the field one score better. And I'm still not exactly sure how it happened, but it did. So went back, and it's tough looking at a rematch with a team, especially it's been relatively recent. It was a month ago that we played them. What do you change? Obviously they've identified what we did well. They're going to try to take it away. How hard do you, you did it well, so how hard do you look to do something different? There's just a lot of what ifs that go into a rematch. In the playoffs, we always feel like we'd rather be playing a team the first time with that, because you just don't know what teams are going to adjust. If you're playing a team for the first time, they're going to do what you've seen them do. But when you play them the second time, you've got that first matchup, and you look, okay, what did they do well? What didn't they do well? Will they try to do this better? Just a lot of different variables that come into play.
Well, it's no secret that you guys will have to figure out a way to slow down Braden Jackson. He's coming off an incredible game. He had 6 touchdowns, 372 all-purpose yards. I see where he's up for SI's National Player of the Week. That's just an incredible game. You guys did a relatively decent job on him the first game, I think.
Yeah, limiting the explosive plays that he can have, and it's easy to just say that. It's a lot harder to do it, but he was so explosive against City High, and if you can keep him, I said, to only in that 5 to 6 yards a carry, that's still really good. But if you can keep him out of that and make them have to drive the ball, they were able to get some screen passes that turned into big plays against us in that first game. And then obviously some fumbles towards the end, and that really paid off for us. But he's a guy, and he's got some great guys blocking for him up front too, and they've created some really big holes, but he doesn't need much. And before you know it, you can't arm tackle the guy. If it's one-on-one in the hole, he's going to beat you. So you got to be able to figure out how to get multiple guys off blocks and really bottle him in, and that's really your only hope against him.
Now, remember, your starting quarterback got dinged up in that game, but your backup came in and played well and helped you to that victory. But I assume your starter's back now?
Yeah, so we've been actually using a 2-QB system. We were kind of rotating our backup in a little before that, which ended up working out for us, because that wasn't just the first time that he had been in the game. But those guys rotate in, and they're very much the same player. The play calls don't change based on who's in the game. And Joey Nahas, the one who came in, had just an incredible night that first time we played. He came into the fourth quarter, and he ended up being the registers athlete of the week with what he put up in the fourth quarter and overtime with that game. But then Parker DePhillips, who's been our starter throughout the year, he's been really, really good. It just so happened that Joey came in and had the hot hand that night after things transpired the way they did, and it worked out well for us.
Well, then I know on your win on Friday, your star running back, Rashad Davis, I think he had like 335 yards and three touchdowns. So your offensive line must have played well.
Well, it's a lot of teams have run the ball pretty easily against Cedar Falls. We had they changed up their defense a little bit, I think, to take away our pass game, which apparently looked like a lot more of a threat on film. Left the box a little bit light, and we exploited that all night long. We ran for just under 300 yards in the first half alone. Wow. In that game Friday night. And again, they left the box light. They were two men short a lot of times in the box. And so I talked about having to gang up on people to tackle the football. We didn't even have to win all our blocks, and it was a lot of big holes for Rashad. And then Cohen Shelton's also had a really nice year for us, coming in and spotting Rashad when he's tired, and you know, he had 27 carries in the first half, but we ran almost 80 plays for the game too. So there's a lot of opportunities, but we just kept running the football, and they didn't adjust. And so we just kept running the football. There was no reason to do anything. The game can be made a lot more difficult than it has to be sometimes. And we were just taking what they gave us, and it turned into carries kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Well, I think you guys came up here and caught the end of that Ankeny game. That was a weird game, because I think Linmar had like 86 plays, Ankeny had 37. Have you ever seen a team win a game when they ran 50 less plays?
No, no. It was weird, and I was following along with it after our game got over, and then Coach Fontana and I decided to just pull in and watch the game, and got to talk to a lot of people up there that night. And Ankeny, talk about a weird, in a good way, a weird story. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, there was talk that this team's not even going to make the playoffs, and then they beat Valley. Things work out for them. They beat Valley, then they destroy Washington. Now, before you know it, they got a good shot at a rematch to go back to the Dome again for I don't know how many years in a row it would be. So what a feel-good story for what Coach Bauer's accomplished down there right now. And 2 years in a row where their preseason or their regular season record hasn't been that great, and here they are, a chance to accomplish something really big at the end of the year.
Yeah, the Hawks will have to go over to Iowa City Liberty, and that's a team that they lost to a few weeks ago, 28-20 over there. So, yeah, I feel like, you know, they probably think they have a good chance to reverse that outcome. I know Liberty's good, but you got to like Ankeny's chances to maybe win that one.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen Ankeny in a rematch. We know how they adapt things, and they will always find a weakness somewhere, and they're going to really exploit it. Liberty's probably the team on the east side of the state that I know the most about this year. Their quarterback, Reese Redding, is my godson, and I've been following along. We were actually at a team camp with them to start the year, and Reese wasn't even supposed to be their starting quarterback. He was going to be playing safety for him, and then for one reason or another, that first game he's playing, and I guess I didn't check the stats coming in right now, but he was, for most of the year, he's been at the top of the state in 5A for all-purpose yardage. And as a quarterback, he's a running quarterback, and he's caused some teams some fits. And it's fun for me to see Reese doing that right now. He's just a junior. He's a short little redheaded kid, you know. His dad was my college roommate. His mom was my wife's roommate, teammates of ours. And so it's been fun to see what he's been able to do. I always just look at him as little Reese, and now he's out there doing that stuff right now. But they, you know, new coach, Coach Chandler over there. I think part of that early part of the season was teams not knowing exactly what they would see from Liberty. And now, before you know it, they're in the same situation. That being said, I mean, what you see from Ankeny over the course of the year, over the course of, you know, before Bauer was even there, is a team that you just watch get better and better as the year goes on. And now they're sitting here, you know, their last loss was to Liberty, so it would be a 4-game win streak right now that they're on.
Right.
Longest of the year. Those guys, they learn from their mistakes and they get better. So we'll see how things work out on Friday night. But another chance for a lot of local teams to be playing up in Cedar Falls.
Well, yeah, and I know Ankeny feels like, you know, they let that game get away from them over there the first time. They had nearly 400 yards of offense, but I know they had some untimely mistakes that hurt them. And they're coming off this game Friday where Daniel Army rushed for 279 yards and four touchdowns. I mean, he really had a breakout game. Not that we didn't know he was good, right. But boy, that was quite an effort.
Well, and that's one of the reasons, you know, you mentioned the play number disparity, is that these explosive plays, you know, shorten your drives quite a bit. And I think that's a big key in high school football more than any other level. I mean, you see it in college too, but in high school more than anything. And I know that's a formula that Gary Swenson's used at Valley for a lot of years, especially as you go to the postseason. Eliminate the big plays, make high school teams drive the football. Eventually, they're going to make a mistake. And that mistake, you know, we're thinking of big mistakes like a fumble or an interception, but also, you know, jumping off sides on 2nd and 7, all of a sudden you make it 2nd and 12, and making high school teams in predictable situations. And that's a formula that he's used for a long time, and that a lot of us would like to put into practice, but Valley's one of the best at it, especially as the season goes on.
Well, you mentioned Valley. They'll be hosting Johnston, and that's a great matchup as well. I don't think there's any team that's hotter than Johnston right now. I think they've won 7 in a row since they lost to Valley earlier. They look good, don't they?
Yeah, and I think Johnston would like to have that game back. There was a couple things officiating-wise that were not done correctly in that game. That really, I'm not sure that was the sole reason, but it definitely made that score that night look not as good as what it, or not as close as what it should have been. Valley is just not a team that you want to play in the postseason. They've shown that for years. That's another team that they just get better and better as the year goes on, and somehow you see them up in the dome. It's been going on for a long time. So that's a game that I think could go either way. Johnston, one thing that they've got going for them this year that they haven't in years past, they're running the ball better than they've ever run it before. And they figured out a way to move. They got a couple talented running backs they've been using. Their offensive line's really, really good. And they've just been, they've been a team that has been a pass first team for a long time. I think it's been 8 years since they've had 1,000. I think that was the number, since they've had 1,000 yards rushing. Not 1,000 yard rusher, 1,000 yards as a team rushing. This year they're over that for the first time. Again, I think it's 8 years. I might be wrong on that number. It might be a little bit shorter than that. But and they're taking a lot of pride in that and being able to pound the football a little bit more now.
Well, now Valley needed a last-second field goal to escape the other night, and their star receivers have been banged up, you know, throughout the year. Do you know if those guys are going to be healthy?
I don't, and I don't know really. You know, the kids talk, and you hear a lot of stuff through them, but I do not know. Valley's a totally different team without those guys. They have to be able to be two-dimensional and have to be able to run or be able to run and throw the ball, and they need those guys to be able to throw the ball. We saw that against Ankeny earlier in the year. Zero passing yards with those guys out. Like, that's, you can't win doing that. Right. You can't win at all. So at this level. So we'll see how Friday night, if those guys play, their chances are really good. But I think at this point, assuming that they don't have those guys, you got to like Johnson's chances to go to the Dome again.
Well, I thought maybe the Class 5A playoffs would be unpredictable. And for the most part, the three pods we've already talked about, the favorites won. But the other pod, we had two upsets.
How about that?
So now we have Southeast Polk hosting Iowa City West. Two of the lower-seeded teams, you know, won last week. So now Southeast Polk's got a good chance to get back to the Dome as well. I mean, they seem to be peaking at the right time.
They do. And what Zelenovich has done over there this year, you know, his son went down a couple weeks ago with a torn ACL. He was their best player going to Iowa State next year. That game could take 7 hours to play. The ball is going to be put in the air. I wouldn't be surprised, depending on how the defenses play, that there could be 100 passes thrown between the two teams that night. It's going to take a long time to play that ball game. Two teams that love to sling it, that's what they're going to do. Iowa City West, incredibly explosive. I've been told the Woods kid, the best receiver for West, is a little banged up and did not play the other night. That's someone they're going to need to beat Southeast Polk. I give the nod to Polk in this one solely because I think both teams are still going to put up points, but what they do on defense at Polk, I think, is going to be different than what Southeast Polk seen from it, or than what Iowa City West has seen from anybody this year.
When you mentioned that we could have four teams, you know, going to the Dome for the semifinals, and that wouldn't be the first time, but
correct. And in a year that we've said all year long is how unpredictable everything is in football. You look at the teams that are left, you're like, okay, these are all teams that have been to the Dome in the last 6 years. Same. I mean, you look at it, with the exception of Liberty, obviously a new school in their third year. But other than that, I mean, 7 out of the 8 teams are your teams that you'd expect every year to be have a chance to go to the Dome. So as unpredictable as it's been, here we are at the end of the year, and it's the same schools that are there again. So,
and I haven't looked too far ahead to see what the potential matchups would be at the Dome, depending on who wins. Have you thought too much about what that would be?
We got our hands full for Friday night, right. So we're not there's a lot of moving parts that can go into that. But yeah, we got our sole focus on Centennial right now as we try to figure that out. And I know they got the same thing for us right now too. So that's over the years we've developed a nice, healthy rivalry with the Jaguars. It's a game where the coaching staffs have got to know each other well. The players, these players are all working out with private coaches throughout the course of the year. They've got to know each other well through a lot of that stuff too. So this is probably one of the healthiest rivalries I've seen that we've played in, where everybody for the most part gets along, and then at the end of the game, it's like you realize, okay, we just try to tear each other's heads off for 48 minutes, but now we go back to living amongst each other and coaching each other's kids and having all the fun with everything else that we do. And that's part of what what I've been doing, you know, over the last several years, and I think you probably got to see some of this too, is we're really fortunate around here, coaches that understand where high school athletics fit in the grand scheme of things. Like we're all as competitive as anybody, and we want to win. But by the same token, we have no problem seeing another coach out at a restaurant and going over and having a beverage with him, or chatting with him, or talking with him about anything, life. We'd all, you know, we all know each other's families. We all know each other's kids. We're all pulling for each other in a lot of different ways, but. You know, come Friday night, we're gonna fight each other. We're gonna fight each other hard, and I wouldn't expect anything different from them. And I know they're not expecting anything different from us.
Well, it should be a great game. I'm looking forward to that.
I hope so. I really hope so.
We got to get through volleyball first.
Sure, and it's been a distracting week, that's for sure. But I just posted this on social media the other night. What a fun time of year! I mean, there's two schools left in the state of Iowa right now that have their football and volleyball teams in 5A. Two schools left that have their football and volleyball teams still alive. Centennial and Dowling.
That's, yeah, quite an accomplishment there. A couple of things I should mention. We didn't mention the Aiken Christian Academy as far as our volleyball goes, but they're on their path to get a third consecutive championship. I don't see anybody knocking
them off. I think you can book it. I would call that right now. Yeah, what Michelle's got going over there is really, really quite remarkable.
And before their championship match on Thursday night, they're going to have the Hall of Fame ceremony, and former Jaguar star Jaylee Winters will be inducted. I was just texting her a little bit earlier to see if she was even going to be here, because I didn't know if she was overseas right now, but she's going to be here for that, so that's a great deal for her too.
And she's been great to still have around. I mean, she gives back a lot to the program, to the community, running camps and clinics for kids and helping out a lot of different young players when she's back. So a great, well-deserved reward for her.
For sure. Well, hey, Andy, I'll let you go. I know you got things to do, but I'll see you over in Coralville.
All right. Early morning.
Yep. All right. You've been listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Coldwell Banker Mid-America. Revive Dermatology Clinic and Spa is also a sponsor of the podcast. Revive opened in 2017 and is located on the south side of Ankeny near Hy-Vee. They provide top-tier aesthetic procedures as well as dermatology. You can usually get a dermatology appointment the same day. Revive offers Botox, fillers, lasers, medical-grade skin care, weight loss injections, and cool sculpting. Revive loves Ankeny and is very supportive of this community. You can give them a call at 515-965-5677. MJ Properties is also a sponsor of the podcast, and MJ Properties is the title sponsor of Ankeny Fanatic as well. I want to thank them for their support. Closing out here at Coldwell Banker Mid-America, you're not one of many clients. You're our most important client. We'll listen to your needs, develop long-lasting relationships, and provide the best services, professional support, and resources in the industry. We're constantly exploring new, innovative ways to elevate your experience and exceed your expectations. Our network of resources allows us to be the number one Coldwell Banker franchise affiliate in Iowa, guiding you home for over 30 years. Well, I want to thank my guest, Andy Pollack, again for coming in today. Appreciate his time and enjoyed that conversation with him, as always. He's probably been our most frequent guest over the last few years. And come back next week for another edition of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast.